Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, witches and wizards, to another episode of Owlpost, a Harry Potter podcast. We're so excited to be here, so grab your flu powder. We're headed to Diagon Alley to celebrate with a butter beer. And with me, as she is always, the most amazing witch on the planet, Drea Kaufman.
Hello! Why, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's so excited to be here. Well, thank you. I just want to thank my mom.
I just imagine little like bows.
And I want to make Professor McGonagall for making me so good at transfiguration. So totally, well, not completely off subject, but we're at brunch the other day, my wife and I, with some friends, and they're telling us all about how they went to Harry Potter World in Orlando, and I asked them a ton of questions about it. But inside, I was seething with jealousy.
I would be too. That would be hard. One of the Educating Geeks ladies, Alice, actually went to do the Universal tour, not Harry Potter World, but the London tour.
Ooh.
And that one made me even more jealous.
That would be fantastic. Like, what a cool trip to go all around the different places, especially because, they have whole vacations surrounded around, you know, visiting Harry Potter places in the British Isles. So maybe if we finish this project, Drea, we need to do that.
If we can make it through the end, I say we do it.
That's right. I mean, well, we've got 3 years to save. So, you know, it's not really a bad idea. And if you want to make that happen, you can sponsor us at...
we'll find a way. We'll make it happen.
Just go over to... TheNerdParty.com/contact, and you can we'll tell you where to send your checks, which is a great place.
I really want it to be real.
Oh, that would be awesome. I totally want it to be real too. So if you want to make that happen, and you're rich, and you're listening to this show, we'll totally take your money
and take all the pictures in the world to prove it.
And we'll do a podcast from one of the Harry Potter places for you. But no, in fact, you could come with us if you're rich.
Yes,
it would be great. But goodness, that's a great place to also give us your feedback on the show. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty with all the other shows there that we do on the network. Some great shows, so make sure you're listening to those. But you can also interact with us on all the show posts. We post our show there, and it's a great place to talk about that episode. We can also be found on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. And, you know, it's been a while, Drea, since we've had some iTunes reviews. No problem there. I mean, we'd just like to have some more. Plus, it just really helps more people find the show. So if you like Owlpost and you want more Harry Potter fans to find it, go over there and give us some star ratings and reviews, and we'll definitely shout out on the show. Thank you! And tell everybody how great you are for your review, so... in fact, if I were to look in the mirror of Erised right now, my deepest, darkest desire would just be to load up iTunes and see thousands of reviews, all 5 stars.
See, I think mine would be for just a giant bag of Burt's Any flavor beans, to be honest.
Wow. I mean, if I'm being really honest, it's probably like a big bag of money. But, you know.
A bunch of galleons.
exactly. A bunch of galleons. Anyway, we are talking about the Mirror of Erised chapter this week. That's chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. And this is, it's such a chapter that has so many different facets to it that I really enjoy. And I love the way it starts because... Malfoy is miserable, and we've been waiting for that all book, because every time he comes on the screen, well, you want to slap him in the face.
I do. I really do. I really do want to slap him in the face.
And
I don't
slap
him
you.
Through the book. I mean, if someone either can send me to London or can teach me how to slap a virtual character like through my writings, I would also be okay with that. I'll take either, guys. I got reasonable expectations.
There you go. But I love this because Malfoy is so jealous of Harry. One, because he got this awesome broomstick, and two, because Slytherin has lost. So he's gone back to taunting Harry. And this is just so awful, taunting Harry about having no proper family. And I'm like, wow, that is just, I mean, that's way harsh. You know, that's way harsh, Ty.
It is. And I mean, that's just a total dick move. Like, he's just the ultimate dick in this chapter.
Well, he really is. And you know what's very interesting, I find, is that Malfoy teases him about having no proper family. But throughout this entire chapter, because this is the chapter of Christmas for the book, and the Weasleys have already basically adopted Harry Potter as their kid.
Yeah, it's like so cute.
It's beautiful.
It's my I think it's my favorite part of the last few chapters is just he gets the package and he's expecting absolutely no presents. And you know, it's not like that, like, well, you didn't have to get me anything. Like, it's genuine. He just doesn't expect to get anything and then wakes up to like all of these presents. And it's like the first Christmas he's ever had. And it's really quite amazing to look at it through those eyes and think about how grateful I really should be for all of the things that I get.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, it's fortuitous for Harry that he has this happen, that the Weasleys are there, because the Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are going to visit Charlie. And so all the Weasley kids are staying at Hogwarts that season. And, you know, there's a lot of fun little things that happen, like them running into Snape and him taking 5 points away from Gryffindor, and Ron being like, man, I hate that Malfoy. And Harry's like, I hate them both, Malfoy and Snape. And like, really, I mean, seriously, two biggest jerks mm-hmm. in this book are mm-hmm. those two characters. I mean, they are relentless. I mean, just relentless at Harry and Ron and Hermione. And it gets even worse, I think, in the next chapter that we'll cover next week. But wow, gosh, they're just awful. But my favorite things before we actually get to Christmas is when they run into Hagrid and they're like, where you been recently? And they're like, well, we've been in the library. Okay. We're just trying to find out who Nicholas Flamel is. And I love how Harry's like, if you wanted to just tell us who he was, that would be great, so we'd have to look anymore. And he's like, I'm not saying nothing.
He's like, he knows he's already screwed up enough, so.
Yes, yes, he's already made it awful. It is, it's interesting, you know, Hermione goes home. Again, I think it's so much fun that once the holidays start, you know, Ron and Harry just to get to spend all this time together. You know, they're like, he starts teaching Harry chess, which is so much fun. And I have to say, the chess game is a lot more fun in the book than it is in the movie, because I forgot that the chess pieces talk back to you.
Well, in the chess game in the book, it makes a lot more sense why we get a chess game in the movie. Like, it now makes the end of the first movie, and what we'll get to the end of this book, now makes a butt ton more sense why things happen the way they do, because we have the backstory. It's right. Not just so kind of random.
Right. And I mean, obviously in the movie they're seen playing chess, but it's not quite the same.
Right.
Because there's a lot made of how Wizards Chess is. And again, I just love it because, you know, Harry's trying to play and he's borrowed these chess pieces from Seamus and they don't trust him because Harry's not a very good player at this point. And they're like, well, don't send me over there. You can't you see his knight? They're going to take him. We can afford to lose him. Like, can't you just hear the pieces? Like, you take piece him. Voice,
you do the piece voices very well. Like, that's now going to be the voice for when I read
them. I don't know why they're not in the movie. I mean, can you just imagine? Like, that's what they said. That's how I picture them sounding, is basically characters from Monty Python. Oh, take him! Not needed!
For some reason, I can't remember the actor's name now, but the one who does The Office UK.
Oh, yes. David Brent. Yes. Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. Ricky Gervais. That's the voice I'm hearing. While, like, I can hear the pieces being Ricky Gervais. That's now going to be it for me.
Oh, totally. Oh my gosh. I'm totally picturing it now. That's awesome.
But it's also one of those, it's one of those things where, like you said early on that like Ron gets kind of shafted in sort of his learning and his arc and his journey. And this is just like a real good example too of how he sort of gets shafted. Because in the movie, he sort of gets the chess game because that's just the next thing up, right? Hermione gets the plant and Harry gets the flying, and then we get the chess pieces and it's up to Ron because he's the only one left. It's sort of how it feels. But in the book, you learn like that's Ron's thing. Like he's really good and that is what he does. And now it makes a lot more sense. And it's just another time that he sort of gets shafted away from the thing he's really good at. It just sort of like falls on him.
Right. No, and I think, you know, when you think about somebody who is good at chess, too, there's a lot that goes into being very good at chess. And that means that you kind of have an analytical mind. You are able to think many steps ahead. You know, you have to be really clever to play chess. You have to be very smart. And you have to be able to think in a lot more dimensions, you know, because you're thinking about all the different moves. Oh, what they, you know, it is very strenuous. I'm not a very good chess player, so I can understand Harry's predicament here, being bad at it and losing to somebody who's really good. But I love it too because, you know, Ron never does that thing where he like lords it over him that he's better at chess. You know, that one thing that Ron's found that he's better at than Harry, like he never makes it a thing. And I just think it's a great part of their relationship, you know, because you'll get some of that jealousy later on from Ron's perspective towards Harry, but we don't get that here. And I don't know, it's something interesting to watch these two characters grow in their relationship. And it's just a lot of fun. I love legitimately listening to the chess pieces, like, don't send me, just send him. So what is great though is we get to Christmas and Harry has presents, and the awful present that he gets from Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia, he gets sellotape or scotch tape and a note with a 50-cent piece. Wow, way to go, guys. Way to really splurge there.
I don't know what they thought he needed scotch tape for.
You never know. I mean,
I guess it sucks when I'm looking for it and I can't find it, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's the most random thing because they just threw something in a bag that was probably on the table.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of when I graduated high school. And I'm not extremely close to extended family in my family. And I remember my aunt on my mom's side didn't came out, and I had friends and family here. And then I got one card from one of my dad's like five brothers, and in it was like a $5 money order. And I was like, it cost you more to get and send me this than it did for you
Good
to
times.
Just keep it. I just remember it felt similar to how I imagine it felt for him to get like 50 cents. It just doesn't make sense.
No, I don't. I'm trying to remember if I've gotten any really weird presents like that. And I can't think of anything that was just completely like, you're like, why did I get this? I did get like a savings bond, and wow, those things are the just not fun to get. You have to wait forever for them to mature, and then yeah, it was just, yeah, that was like, well, really? That's it? That anyway. But
well, and they're a pain to cash.
Yeah, exactly. What's wonderful though is that Harry gets this wonderful jumper that Mrs. Weasley has made him, and some wonderful fudge too for Christmas. My dad always makes fudge, so that totally reminds me of Christmas time. And so I really love that. And the idea that just the thought that she cares about him already and makes him something just like, you know, she's his own kid. It's awesome.
I think it's great. And I love that he is, you know, Ron's like, oh, I hate it. And then Harry's like, I don't know. I don't think it's so bad. He just has this, like, if you didn't get any presents, you'd probably feel differently, but without being, like, kind of arrogant about it or, like, self-righteous about it. He was just like, oh, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just think it's really nice.
Well, and it is funny because poor Ron, like, mine's always maroon, and I hate maroon.
I
like,
know.
I feel for him, you know?
You really do.
Oh, goodness. But then, of course, you know, this is the big moment where he gets the present with his name on it, but he doesn't know who it's from. And it turns out to be something that's going to be really important for the rest of the series.
This is one of those times where she drops something early on in the book that you're like, oh, it's really important to this book. And then when you get to the end of the series, you're like, oh my God, that was like really important to the entirety of the storyline.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, obviously an invisibility cloak is super cool. And like, yes, they will use it a lot in this book. But the enormity with which she places on this at the end of the series, and what it actually is. And that's one of the things that I love about this whole series is things that will be introduced and become second nature for Harry, like his invisibility cloak, which he has all the time, will become something of such paramount importance. And you're just, by the time that happens, you're so blown away because you're so used to it just being around and being that thing that Harry has in his back pocket, you know?
Yeah, it's, yeah. I don't have anything else to add to that one.
But I also love that this was really fun, and this is something that really isn't in the movie, but I liked that, you know, they have an incredible Christmas day. They have a ton of fun together, and then they have this huge feast, and like everybody that's still at the school and all the students that are there and all the teachers there, they're just kind of partying. And my favorite thing is that Hagrid has been eating and drinking a lot, calling for a lot of wine, and he kisses Professor McGonagall on the cheek, who giggles and blushes after it happens. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I cannot imagine the McGonagall of the movie having that happen.
I know, I want to see Maggie Smith giggle and blush.
Yes, me too. Me too. Well, and what I love about it too is that it makes the professors more human, you know, like that they are just people and this is their holiday as well.
It is. And it was nice. There's a few things that I wondered about, like, did Ginny go to see Charlie too, or what sort of happened to her? And then sort of like, did none of these professors have family outside of Hogwarts? Because none of them leave.
Yeah, that is a really interesting question. It does seem like that none of the professors at Hogwarts have gotten married. And that's different, you know, and it's interesting.
I think it's one of those things where I don't think she really knew or thought about that. She just wrote them in because it was fun to include them and show them having like this human non-professor type side, or I'm sorry, this like magical non-professor type side. But I don't think she really thought about like, oh, well, but if they had families, they would go home too. Or maybe their contract just says they're supposed to be there. I mean, right. But either way, it's just a small oversight, which I mean, it's her first attempt at a novel. And if that's the extent of the oversight, like I'm not super concerned, but
yeah.
But it's just one of those like things you have to not think too hard about, which is hard for me.
Well, and she will fill in their backstories later. So McGonagall was married at one time, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think you're right.
From what she's released like three small ebooks that are you can buy, and I read them all, and one of the stories is about McGonagall, and I believe she was married at one time, and he passed away, and so she just lives at the castle at this point. So, and you kind of get the feeling that a lot of the teachers at the school are like that, you know, like that. They're all pretty old for the most part, and a lot of them have kind of had that part of life pass them by, and that's why they're there. So that, and I mean, I'm not sure who would date Professor Trelawney because she's kind of whack, but that's a whole other book.
Hey, it takes one to love one. I'm sure there are plenty of whack, weird wizard or witches out there that would like Trelawney.
I mean, I got married, so I guess that's proof positive what you're saying. So, oh gosh. I love Harry, though. You know, he's had a wonderful Christmas day, but he's kind of like laying there in his bed. He's thinking about this thing that was his dad's. Like, it's his first real connection with something that was his parents. And the note had said, you know, use this well. And it's kind of going over his head. And that thing kind of clicks for Harry, like it does in a lot of places in this story, where he's like, oh, I know I can use this for. And of course, you know, he runs to the restricted section in the library trying to find out who Flamel is. And this is one of the things that I thought was fascinating. And one of the parts that Rowling has said is one of the scariest things she thought she ever wrote, which was pulling a book off the shelf and having it scream at you.
That is terrifying. And I think it happens in the movie, but I don't think it's nearly as impactful as it was in the book, because like you're all hyped up and then all of a sudden it just starts like screaming bloody murder at you. And then he's like, I can't even get it to shut up. It just would be so unnerving.
There's something about the way she describes it, too, in the book. You know, he's crept into the library. You're kind of putting that in your imagination. You're placing yourself there. You know, it's dark and you're trying to be as quiet as you can. And you know, you are just looking through books. You open this one up and it screams bloody murder at you. Not only does it scare the crud out of you, I mean, just you'd probably jump as high as possible. But then, of course, you're trying to be quiet. And you can't make it shut up.
Well, so, and then I love how he just like freaks out afterwards. He like trips backwards and loses his balance and is all like unnerved and is like, oh gosh, what do I do? Like his reaction is pretty much exactly what would happen to me. And like, I can't figure out what I'm doing and I tripped over everything and I've made so much noise.
Yeah. And I love the way that she runs this, you know, has Harry run and then he's trying to get away from Filch and Snape who are looking for him. And he's able to sneak into this room and we end up with him being scared again because he walks past this mirror and sees something that he just knows had to be a dream, which is a whole crowd of people standing right behind him. Like, how weird would that be?
Yeah, and then he keeps looking behind him and there's nothing there, like, especially in a castle that has ghosts, like, that can't add to your unnerving feeling of looking in a mirror full of people and being like, are they actually behind me? And I just can't see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, I think the thing that about this scene is, again, you had your first real connection with Harry and his parents. And then you add that on top of what's happening as he looks in the mirror. And it's his parents who are standing beside him as he looks in the mirror and, you know, he's noticing the things about them that, you know, he hadn't noticed before. You know, how pretty his mom is, how she has his eyes, how, you know, his hair and his glasses are so much like his father. And like, it's just it's kind of a heart-wrenching scene as you're reading it and knowing that she really drives home the thing that Harry's lost by doing this, I think.
Well, and the way she describes the feeling associated with that, it's he had a powerful kind of ache inside him, half joy, half terrible sadness. It just like, it resonates, like that feeling of both being really happy, but at the same time, it being just like the most awful thing in the world at the same time. So I thought that was a really powerful phrase and a really powerful section. And it really brings to light, maybe even more than the visual in the movie does, to make you really understand what he's going through.
Well, and, you know, for so many people, you know, I think myself included, and just about anybody who's reading this, and especially if you're older, you know, you're aware of those feelings. You know, you felt those feelings before. Of longing and sadness and that, you know, like that feeling of, you ever looked through like old pictures on your phone, Drea, or like on your computer and like you run past that picture of that person that really meant something to you, but like you haven't seen or talked to them in a really long time and you kind of get that feeling?
Yeah. Like,
That's just a small taste, I feel like, of what Harry's going through, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I lost a close family member about 6 months ago, really quickly. It was kind of like that. Even now when I'll see pictures or something will come up and I remember where I learned it or where I heard it, there's still moments where like you're grateful and you smile for the things that you enjoyed about it. But at the same time, it like hurts at the same time. And you're like, 'cause I don't get more of those, and other people don't get to experience that. So it's a hard feeling to cope with. And I think it gets easier with time, but I still don't think it, I mean, clearly it's been, 10 years for Harry and it still hasn't really passed. So.
Right. Well, and I mean, for him, he didn't really know his parents. And so, but kind of coming face to face with them, it puts a whole new level of sadness on him, I think,
It's like it's fresh and real all over for him.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe in a way that it's never been before, because this is so much more of a, this is an experience, that he's actually having with them. And in some way. And so I think that is really interesting. And of course, you get him running to Ron and, Ron, you have to come see this, And of course, for Ron, he doesn't see anything like that. He sees, for him, the things that would mean and matter the most, which is to be somebody that matters.
For sure. It's almost just as devastating to see Ron's. It almost hurts as much to see what Ron's deepest desire is as it does to see Harry's, because Harry's we sort of know, we know he lost his parents, we know he's constantly reminded that he doesn't know them and hasn't had that opportunity, and it's sort of alluded to that Ron feels like an outcast and or like a in the mold with his family, but for it to be so blatant and to know that's like his deepest, darkest desire is to be his own man is like almost as heart-wrenching as Harry's deep desire. And it's so unusual. We have two. It's just a real testament to how much those two bond over the fact that they both desperately have these deep, dark desires that are so sad almost. That, some people, like we talked about earlier, like, I would really love a big giant bag of jelly beans. And Matt would really love a big pile of money. And neither of those really invoke this, like, inner sadness. But these two do, and they understand each other without even knowing how much they understand each other.
Well, and I think you have given us a good way to, segue into the last time that he'll look in the mirror. And of course, he goes, even though Ron has told him not to, because he's get a strange feeling about this whole thing. And, Dumbledore is there. And I love Harry. He's like, oh, I didn't see you, sir. And I love Dumbledore as so almost Yoda-like, in the way he talks to Harry sometimes. Yes. Strange how short-sighted being invisible can make you, Dumbledore said. And Harry was relieved to see he was smiling. And I love the tender way in which Dumbledore approaches this with Harry. Because I feel like, because he understands how the mirror works, he knows what Harry's seeing. Because, and this is something that, a huge spoiler alert, but we're going to talk about it. So if you haven't read the last book, this might be a place where you'd want to maybe skip a couple of minutes, but I think it's important to talk about here. Dumbledore doesn't tell Harry what he sees. He tells him he sees socks, comfortable pair of socks. But I'm pretty sure that when Dumbledore looks in the mirror, he sees the exact same thing that Harry does, which is his family.
And his specifically probably his sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you will learn how much Harry and Dumbledore have in common down the road in a lot of ways. And some of the same things they kind of drive them internally, the longings that they have. And for Dumbledore, it's worse because he feels ultimately responsible for what happened to his sister, whereas Harry doesn't have to have that feeling because it's not his fault what happened to him and his parents. But it's Yeah, it's it really, I thought that was interesting because when I said it's a big bag of money, if I really looked in the mirror of error said, I'm not exactly sure what I'd see, you know?
And I think that's part of the whole thing. Like, it's hard to see. I think it takes a lot of self-awareness to really own what it is you think you'd see. Like, a lot. And I think that's probably why the mirror is so dangerous. Because if you don't have a mature level of self-awareness to handle it, you either are looking at the wrong side of yourself, or you won't be able to cope with what it actually shows you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what I love about, too, in the way that he describes it, it's such an important lesson for any generation. You know, this mirror gives us neither knowledge nor truth. And that men have wasted away by dwelling on dreams, basically, and forgetting to live. Like living in a fairyland, living in a way that denies the truth, you know? Like,
or even just wishing for something that probably can't happen. Because a lot of times mm-hmm. the thing we desire most is not something we can have. Like, Harry cannot have that family back. He can mm-hmm. build a new family. But the one he's looking at in the mirror, his mom and dad and grandpa and all that, he cannot get them back. And so he could try all his life and waste his entire life for it instead of rebuilding a new family and getting the mm-hmm. support and love he needs now. It's about looking at a specific outcome versus the thing you actually need. You know, you need to focus right. on what it is you need and not how you get that thing and exactly what it looks like. So I think that's another lesson people have to learn.
Well, and two, you know, a lot of times when you're just completely in your own world of dreams, you're exactly what Harry was when he entered the room and Dumbledore said, it's amazing how short-sighted you can be when you're invisible. When you're so focused on your own, like, little reality, you forget to see what's right in front of you, you
and
know? And like you're saying,
people.
Exactly. And for Harry, you know, he already is building that new family. You know, he's already a part of a new family. He just hasn't totally realized it yet, you know, that the Weasleys are this new family for him. And so I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's one of the most powerful statements that she writes in any of the books, is that whole idea of it does not do to dwell on dreams and forget to live. And that to not miss what's in front of you. Don't miss life and what's happening all around you because you were too caught up in something you didn't have or something you could never have. And you weren't busy making a life for yourself with what you do have, you know?
Like, yeah, and I think changing what that can be and what that can look like, right? Shifting. Okay, so maybe I can't mm-hmm. get my mom and dad back, but you know what? I really do need a mother and a father figure. So how do I, you know, I have people who are willing to fulfill that role for me. So how about I open up and accept that instead, you know? Or how about I go out and I find a way to make those roles happen, whether they're older or younger or a mom or not a mom or whatever. So I think that is so powerful, and it's an important lesson for everyone to learn that's just sort of slipped in there, just kind of placed. Mm-hmm. Like, you take yeah. this for what you want.
Well, and I like that the very end of the chapter, Harry is thinking about, you know, the fact that maybe Dumbledore hadn't been quite truthful with him about the whole woolen socks. And then he realizes that was a pretty personal question to ask somebody.
Like, yeah, so that was
what's
like
your deepest, darkest desire?
That was like the most relatable moment, because I'm like, oh yeah, I totally would have asked too. And then yeah. I'd be sitting somewhere later and be like, man, that was inappropriate. Maybe
exactly.
I should make sure that wasn't taken the wrong way.
But I think that the beautiful part about it is the way, again, in which Dumbledore handles this young boy. Like, that he allows Harry to be curious. He doesn't destroy his curiosity, but he does what any good figure in somebody's life should do, which is to say, this is not good for you, but let me show you what is good for you. And you're not wrong for wanting this specifically, but it's not what's best for you. It could lead to harm, you know? Like, I just love the way in which the relationship here with him and Dumbledore, it just really comes into its own, and it just continues to build throughout this book and, of course, the series. And it's one of the most fascinating parts of the series because, again, it will play a huge part at the end of the series in book 7, and in a way that you don't necessarily expect to happen when you're in, like, you know, book 3. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a master.
She really is. She really is.
Well, Drea, I hope everybody has enjoyed hearing us talk about The Mirror of Erised. We would love to hear your thoughts about this chapter. Maybe you could share what you think you might see in The Mirror of Erised if you were to look into the mirror of, well, if you haven't realized that Erised is desire spelled backwards, that's what it is. But yeah, what are your desires? What are the things that you think you might see in the mirror? Or what did we get wrong? Just find us in any of those places we mentioned at the beginning of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Again, hit us up on iTunes with a star rating and review. And Drea, if anybody wants to talk to you about Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so if you would like to share your deepest, darkest desire of what you'd see in that mirror, or if you want to talk about either Harry Potter or cats, because that's generally the, or food, because those are like the three things that I talk about online. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
Well, you, if you want to talk to me, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I am also on Instagram. I take pictures of food and other things, like collectibles or what I'm reading or just, you know, all sorts of stuff. So you can find me there at MRushing. I'm also on the Trek FM network talking about Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on a show called The Orb. I also do the General Geek Show over there called the 602 Club, and we talk about every fandom that we can. You know, we've talked about Harry Potter or DC movies, Marvel movies, Bond, Star Wars, you name it, we're probably talking about it. So check it out. I think you'll have a blast with that show. Again, that's the 602 Club and The Orb. Both of those are on iTunes. And, of course, also doing on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations. We are loving doing that show. It's so much fun. We have just a great time each and every week talking about Star Wars. And, you know, sometimes it's a really serious topic about an idea in Star Wars. Sometimes it's just super silly or somewhere in between. You never know what you're going to get, but I hope you'll listen. And again, of course, you can find Aggressive Negotiations on iTunes as well. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.